One of the best things about Premiere Pro is how easy it is to jump through and spot points. If I want to use specific tracks, just make sure those tracks are highlighted. If you want to use all tracks, add the Shift key, and now it will stop at every single edit point on all tracks, irregardless of which tracks are selected.
Welcome to Radio Irregardless, your non-standard blend of irrespective and regardless. Now please welcome to the Internet Airwaves. Really? Internet Airwaves?
It's okay, you can just do it. It's just say Internet Airwaves. It sounds really cool.
Alright. Sorry, I'm just...
Internet Airwaves.
Okay then. Please welcome to the Internet Airwaves, your host, Mark Scalia.
And welcome to Radio Irregardless with me, your host, Mark Scalia. And I'm still adjusting some sounds. It sounds very muffled. I don't sound that good tonight. At least the way it kind of sounds a little bassy. A little Count Basie. I'm in a really weird mood. But it's good to have you here listening to Radio Irregardless with me, your host, Mark Scalia. We are your non-standard blend of irrespective and regardless, and we thank you for joining us, where a lot of things happen, and some of it's going to happen tonight. And without wasting a ton of time, let's just do it right, shall we? Let's get in to the Happening Now monologue.
Everything that happens now is happening now.
What happened to then?
Past it.
When?
Just now. We're it now.
Go back to then.
When?
Now.
Now?
No.
I can't.
Why?
We missed it.
When?
Just now.
When will then be now?
Soon.
Yes. It's happening now. I swear, it's like I've taken laughing gas over the past 10 minutes. Like, maybe it was the song, because I start doing the bumpers music. And I haven't heard that song in so long, and I forgot I had it. excuse me. And it was just, you know, find this, Kenny Loggins and Joe Perry. It was just this obscure song. It was just, you know, it was like, hey, let's do it. But in the Happening Now model, like, let's talk about Happening Now. I'll start, because you can't. Christmas approaching. Warning. Christmas approaching. I was actually on Facebook today, and Scrooge, Ebenezer Scrooge, has his own Facebook page. And he actually, it was Joe or Steve Perry. Was it Steve Perry or Joe Perry? It was Steve Perry from Journey. That's who it was. But I was on Facebook today, and Ebenezer Scrooge posted, he said it's 42 days left to Christmas, and he's going to be beating Cratchit for all 42 days. He's a very sadomasochistic kind of thing. But I will tell you this, if you don't have your tickets to the Salem Trolley in the Christmas Carol, there is a glimmer of hope. I and my lovely bride are working on something to get Ebenezer Scrooge to come to a location, to your location of choice, or to let you know where he may be seen publicly. Look for that next week, because hopefully by next week we'll have it. I don't want to tip it any more than that, but let's just say that Scrooge will be around a public place. Yes. Ooh, yes, it could happen. Where Scrooge is actually going to make a kind of a public appearances, much like his arch nemesis, Kris Kringle. But I'm growing the beard. This is now almost, listen. Yeah, I'll do that for you. I am now 2 weeks into the beard, and it's already starting to get itchy, which is craziness. And I've noticed more gray in it, which is actually cool in a way. But I'm growing that out, so I'm looking forward to that. The show prep for the last few shows that I'm doing for Radio Regardless, as you know, for being a loyal listener, and if you are not a loyal listener and you're listening for the first time, welcome. But what we do is we go on Christmas break. We go on holiday break. I call it Christmas break. You don't grow a beard, you just stop shaving, it automatically happens. Hey, wait a minute, that's my old bit. You don't try to grow a beard, you try to grow corn. Oh my God, that joke is 20, well, it's not really a joke, but that's like 23, 44 years old. Thank you for the remembers, Mr. Paul. It just happens automatically. I'm telling you, I'm in a very weird mood. So I'm going to be prepping for the last few shows. Now, there are only a few shows left, and I know that I had some guests swapping around, because tonight was supposed to be the drinking game show, but of course we're going to do that next week with my return guest, Jason Boddy, and we'll get to that. And then, of course, after that will be the Thanksgiving Eve show, which it's going to be about food. We're going to talk about food a little bit, and you never know what's going to happen. And then I'm trying very desperately. You're drinking it. No, it's fine. Kim, drink away. Why not? Have a party. And of course, I have one Wednesday. And I booked it. I did book it. Yes. And I won't get done until 9 o'clock. Well, there's a chance that we may do a Christmas show. There's a chance. Because I'll be in Cambridge. So I'm trying to do a Christmas show on December 3rd, and it'll be maybe a 9:30 show. Yes, ooh, because I happen, and then I'm Scrooging for the rest of the month, and then, of course, January comes, and then I'm going to be hopefully doing some remotes. Otherwise, I won't be able to start up the show again until January 21st, and that would be 5 weeks, 6 weeks, and I don't want to be away from you guys that long, so that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to prep to the Christmas show. In the worst case scenario, I will pre-produce the show, and I will just have my wonderful bride click a few buttons and then produce the show out, which would be fun and interesting. So, and of course, weather changes. I don't know if you guys heard, apparently the apocalypse is coming. No, not the snowpocalypse, not the rainpocalypse, but the polar vortex apocalypse. It's fucking cold. Did we not learn our lesson from watching the movie The Day After Tomorrow? Cold doesn't chase you, you silly bitches. So, the fuck is wrong? Oh, special guest, Paul Kravitz the Jew. Oh, Paul the Jew. Paul the Christmas Jew. I don't even know if there is such a thing as Christmas Jew. It might be. Pass that bottle. I actually wanted a drink, but Karen told me I can't have any of that, so. Because there's only one beer left in the house, and otherwise I'd be drinking brandy. And you don't want me drinking brandy, because she's a fine girl. Anyway, but the polar vortex is coming down, and people are like, there's going to be bringing snow. And I am just so fucking tired. I mean, my God, did we not do this last year? Did we not do this with the weather? It's snow. It's rain. It's cold. It's going to happen. Stop worrying. I liked it so much better. I liked it so much better when we just had a once a week forecast. It was so much better. But I don't want to start any more of that. So I'll tell you what, why don't we start this week in movie history to give you guys something to do, because I got some surprises and I got to move. This week in movie history, ladies and gentlemen, we are moving very fast. In this week in movie history, in 1891, Holmes and Watson capture Lord Blackwood. That would be Sherlock Holmes. I gave it to you. This week in movie history, in 1937, Leonard Lowe becomes catatonic at 20 years old and is sent to the Bainbridge Hospital. I'll give you a second on that one, because that's a little tricky one. I don't know if you knew this. This week in movie history, 1955, the Enchantment Under the Sea dance happened. Awakenings. It is Awakenings, yes. And there's a little bit of a delay, so I'll let you catch up. This week in movie history, 1962, Delta Fraternity is brought to the Greek Council. A lot of things happening this week. 1974, Ronald DeFeo, Jr., massacres his family. It wasn't his fault. The house told him to do it. I'll give you that one. 1984, Sarah Connors tapes a message to her unborn son. That was the Terminator. I'll just keep moving. This week in movie history, Charles Lee, 1988, Charles Lee Ray is shot and transfers his soul into the good guy buddy doll. That's it. Yes, it was the Amityville Horror. The Delta Fraternity was Animal House. And let's see, where are we now? Oh, yeah, this week in movie history, 1999, Lindy Rubin is killed at 4 p.m. by steam coming out of a steam pipe. That would be the bone collector. And 2002, James Bond checks into a hotel in Havana, Cuba. That would be Die Another Day. And last but certainly not least, this week in movie history, 2006, Day 290. Tom and Summer break up over pancakes. And that would be 500 Days of Summer. That is our movie history, this week in movie history. And I'm going to be moving very fast because I want to play some games with you guys. And speaking of games, we are playing something that we haven't played in a while. 500 Days of Summer. Yes, it is. There you go. We have not played this in a while, guys. So I can't wait to play.
Me.
I fucking love that. I think that's the funniest thing I've ever put on this show, and I really enjoy that. This is that game, Stop Yelling at Me, where I play Stop Yelling at Me. We love it. We're gonna play Stop Yelling at Me, and I'm gonna play. Oh, where is it? How is it not put together? Did I not do this right? Are you kidding me? Lyrics. Oh, apparently this is going to be an interesting show for me, too, because I didn't keep track of it. So we're going to play Stop Yelling at Me. I think it's four. Hopefully it's five. But it might only be four yelling at me's. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to play Stop Yelling at Me. Where if you write down all four and then put them in your computer and then hit return or enter and put them all at once. Yes, pour away. So you will be the first one to get them all right. You will get an amazing, amazing sound. And if not, I will give you the buzzer. That's how that works. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Stop yelling at me.
Stop yelling at me.
It's over, Johnny. It's over.
Nothing is over. Nothing. You just don't turn it off.
Ouch! You! I got nowhere else to go!
Stop breaking the law, asshole!
Oh, you're gonna die, you motherfucker! You're gonna die!
Ow! Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna cry.
What happened? That was no.
It's over.
Thunder.
There we
You're
go.
Gonna become a very dangerous place.
All right. That sounds very crackly for some strange reason. So, ladies and gentlemen, I will play that one more time, and I want you to write them all down, and then type them in, and then hit enter. Here we go.
It's over, Johnny.
Oh, I think we got it.
It's over.
Nothing is over. Nothing. You just don't turn it off.
No, Kim, you're not right.
Ouch.
Here's the second one.
I got nowhere else to go.
Stop breaking the law, asshole!
Well, Kim got that one right. Liar, liar.
You're gonna die, you motherfucker! You're gonna die!
Mow!
The guy says you're gonna eat lightning
and crap thunder. It keeps stopping right in the middle of it. I don't know what happened with this one.
It's over, Johnny.
Here we go.
It's over. You're gonna die!
Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna
It keeps stopping in the middle of it. There we go.
You're gonna become a very dangerous place.
All right, Paul thinks it is. Rambo, which is correct. First Blood. Actually, technically, it's First Blood. So, eh. And since no one else is trying, it's First Blood. Not Rambo. Officer and a Gentleman, correct. Liar, Liar, Deer Hunter, and Rocky III. So, Paul, I'll tell you what. If you type in First Blood right now, I'll give you credit for that. I'll give you some credit. I got to fix that one because it's usually I put all the lyrics in there. I don't understand. It doesn't write right. You know, something I thought I had it. There we go. First, blood. There we go. Oh, I don't know what that was. Officer and a gentleman. Correct. Liar, liar. Yes. The deer hunter. You knew it because he went, ow, mow. sorry, deer hunter was actually one word. Duh. No, it wasn't. I'm sorry. Rocky III, the search for more money. And, of course, there we go. Let's see. So, sorry. First blood, dick. It was. See? So, Paul, since you got them all right, let me give you a really cool sound. Let's see. I'll give you a really cool sound. How about, let's see, correct. Let's see. I want to give you something good. A good correct sound. Where are they all? Oh, they're missing. Oh.
You don't scare me. I got chunks of guys like you in my stool.
No, that's not right. We got to give him this. There we go. It's a correct answer. I haven't been drinking. I really haven't. I think I'm going to do a shot of brandy. I want to. Maybe on the break, I can run down real quick and get some brandy. But that's how we play the game Shut Up right there. Now, ladies and gentlemen, before we go to our break, because I'm actually going to call my guest on the break, you might notice a couple things. The name of the show is Federico Films Stars, the movie kind. We actually have a wonderful guest coming up, and he is a filmmaker. He's been teaching. He's into production, and now he's branching out. He's actually might be doing some acting work as well. So he's Federico Mush. I keep pronouncing it. It's Muchnik. Muchnik, that's it. I keep saying Muchnik, that's it. And he's an amazing guy. We've known each other, oh my God, almost 10 years, so something like that. But I did want to play, I'm going to play a game with him, and because I'm going to play a game with you, which I want to play that game now. What's this? I'm just looking to curry favor for some wine passed over here. Yes, there is no wine. There's no wine. She's Bogarting it. She's Bogarting the wine. All right, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take our first break, and when we come back, we are going to listen to our wonderful guest. You're going to get to know him, and he's getting to know you, and everything's going to be good, and it does something like that. So you are listening to Radio Irregardless with me, your host, Mark Scalia. We'll be right back.
For you.
I guess I'm probably not the surprise you expected.
They're back.
So what do you want to do?
And police still targeting them.
Tonight, Dateline's hidden cameras are in an undercover house complete with a hot tub.
So did you bring your swim trunks?
Oh. You say that you're a pretty normal, horny old man. Talk about oral sex.
There's the internet addict who comes clean.
I'm too old for this shit.
And the marine sniper who comes armed.
What's in store for these men? Chris Hansen with a new To Catch a Predator.
You're one ugly motherfucker.
Hi, this is John M. Keating, and you're listening to Radio Irregardless with Mark Scalia. So now you know, and knowing is half the battle. G.I. Joe!
To leave a question or comment, call the Radio Irregardless hotline at 978-219-9294. And you're back at Radio Irregardless. Joining me via Skype is the aforementioned Federico Muchnik.
Hi.
There he is.
All right.
There we go. So he is loud. So say hello to my lovely listening audience, if you would, Federico.
Hello to your lovely listening audience.
He's a filmmaker. He can read right off the script. That works out really nice. So as I alluded to before I went to break, you and I have actually known each other for I say almost 10 years now. Probably close to that.
Yeah, something like that.
Where you and like I, that. Now I met you through CDIA, the now defunct, or the now to be resurrected CDIA in Waltham, and you were in charge of the film department. What was your official title?
So I was the film program director. I was the guy who came in and made sure that, you know, instructors were hired, gear was acquired, curriculum was written, and eventually getting people like you involved.
Yes. And it was a, and then you had left to pursue a full time now full time filmmaking. What's that like?
Well, you know, it's I kind of it was kind of always sort of around. I kind of really didn't have much of a choice. It was one of those you better do this or you're not going to get any food. You're not going to have any clothes. Really? Yeah, I really couldn't do anything else. I really didn't fit into anything. I tried working in a cubicle for a couple of years, and then I tried telemarketing for a while, and then eventually I just said, you know, I think if I just pick up a camera and start shooting stuff and then editing stuff, and maybe somebody will notice and hire me to do something for them. And that's kind of eventually what happened.
That is such a good story, because most people turn to crime.
Yeah, but you know, producing and crime, they're not that far apart. No, no. You know, they both involve deception and deceit. You know, the old salt, how do you know a producer is lying, right?
Lips are moving.
Oh, geez, I can't tell you anything you don't already know.
Oh, usually they say, how do you know if a teenager is lying? His lips are moving.
Right. Okay.
So it's the same thing. No, it's an old joke. So how many films have you actually made or been involved in, I should say?
Well, you know, films are like they're like nations. You've got your multinational, you got your large countries and your small countries. You've got your little republics. You got your little, you know, islands. And, you know, so I've made films that are big and small. So they've come in all shapes and sizes. Honestly, Mark, I've lost count.
Really?
Yeah, it's just I've kind of lost count if you throw in all the little corporate and educational stuff. But I would say the stuff that I, you know, could really sink my teeth into that were substantial in terms of, you know, maybe time commitment and budget and scope. I don't know, maybe half a dozen different types of things.
Wow. So you actually started a website, and this is something I wanted to ask you since you started. You have a couple websites. You say you have mightyvisual.com. What is that site?
Yeah, that's a portal to people who just want to reach me for that kind of project that they need somebody to tell their story, whether it's a company that needs a story to tell, or a group of people, or an organization, or even an individual. That's how you can reach me through Mighty Visual. That's just a sort of a splash page, but. You know, I didn't mention another keep a blog called Film Advisor at Blogspot. And I like to write about some of the new stuff that's coming out. I recently wrote about a film called Art and Craft about an art forger. Wonderful film. Stuff that might not make it into the mainstream press. I like to write about that. And then there is a website for the feature that I made last year, This Killing Business, at thiskillingbusiness.com. And
yeah.
People can learn more about the film at that.
And I was going to ask you about that particular film. What's that entail?
That entails making every effort to make as polished of a and as entertaining of a film as possible. And use it. Look, Mark, it was either that or go back to graduate school. You know? I mean, in the end, the cost it turned out to be kind of the same, you know. I mean, you know, 2 years of graduate school, 3 years of graduate school, or make a film, yeah. And so I chose the latter. You know, it's all Boston made, all local talent, made, shot, filmed, produced entirely here, and it was me and a group of people, trying to make something that, you know, might stand a chance at competing in the cutthroat distribution and exhibition world. Yeah. Where there's a glut of product. we thought, gee, what if we made something that really looked and sounded good? But and it had a nice story. It had an interesting story, and we did get a distributor in Europe. But you know, it's funny. You can make a film these days, but you're talking to a guy who made a film and who at the same time is looking at his stepkids who are making videos for YouTube. And they're getting 5,000, 10,000 hits.
Yeah.
And I'm getting maybe 200 people at a film festival. I mean, do the math.
Yeah. I've seen that. And that's because, you know, you brought me in to actually teach the directing module for the school, which was great. And I tell them the same thing. And it's unfortunate, like, you know, 5 years ago, any Yahoo with a GoPro or, you know, a handheld or even an iPhone now with a Vime or Vin, I don't know what to call them anymore, but anybody is making a film and these, you know, and these one hit wonders, but real films are so much more work. Like you're talking about the distribution, the talent, the filming, the editing, it's so much, I mean, to do an actual film, it takes so much more effort. And it's harder. It's harder to get it seen, just like you're saying.
You know, you getting back to you teaching at CDA, you did do a nice job, by the way. I remember the kids liked what you brought.
Thank you. Thank you.
The party.
Well, that's a nice little segue. You are now wearing a different hat as well. You are now going from behind the camera to in front of the camera. Is that correct?
Yeah, but you know, it's kind of a return because back in 91, I made a film called The Golden Boat with a guy named Raul Ruiz, a Chilean director, and he cast me in the lead role. And the film ended up going to Sundance.
Really?
And yeah, it was distributed by Strand Releasing. They're still around. And it played at New York Film Festival, Sundance, Toronto. And I got my sort of, you know, acting chops sort of up to speed for that. It basically involved memorizing my lines because I asked the director back then, I said, you know, who is this guy? And he said, look, I cast you because he's you. So you can't act. You must not act. Just show up and know your damn lines. I was like, oh, okay, I think I can do that. You know, at the time I was a producer at WGBH. So in between my producing gig, I'd go home and memorize lines. So, you know, there's all kinds of stories around the making of that film. It was James Shamus's first movie. He had went on to produce Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and wow. Brokeback Mountain, and The Hulk, and a bunch of other stuff. And by the way, the film just last week was screened at the Museum of Modern Art as a retrospective to Shamus's work, and all the producers were there.
Are you getting checks?
Couldn't make it. Yeah, I get a check saying you owe us money.
Really?
Yeah, we lost so much that we're asking you to pay. We said deferred, but what we meant is you pay us.
Oh my God! You know, it's funny. My wife, she's done a bunch of different acting roles, and she still gets checks every once in a while for a couple movies she did. And the last check she got was like $8 or something like that. But she's gotten actually checks for like $2.20, and I'm like, yeah. It costs you more money to send it.
Yeah. It's a painfully honest system, also known as the long tail, and people, most of us, don't see any of that. And if anybody who gets into this racket for the money is seriously misguided about the realities.
Yeah. Well, I got into it for the money, so I don't know what to tell you. But you now you're returning now. You're auditioning in New York. You're auditioning in Boston.
Yeah, so, you know what happened?
You actually made me, you actually tried to make me forget about that whole segue, but I'm a good interviewer. I will come right back.
I'm going to try and sidestep that one, yeah. You know, 2 years of my life spent making this Killing Business was such a brain drain. It was such an emotional energy drain. I sort of was in shock about what to do with my life after finishing the film. I was sitting there looking out the window, like I was on, I don't know, mushrooms or something. It was just crazy. And I eventually realized, look, you've got to find something that brings you joy. Where's the joy? You know, are you really going to give yourself another project? Are you really going to spend 2 more years, you know, writing, conceiving, producing, directing, editing, distributing, marketing a film? And the answer was a resounding no.
No.
And then I thought, well, why did I get into this in the first place? And the answer was because I loved watching actors. I loved watching, you know, Dustin Hoffman and All the President's Men, and I liked Pacino and Serpico, and I liked Red, you know, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Those were Chinatown with Jack Nicholson. I loved watching those guys. And so I thought, you know, I'd done it before, and I'd done some other acting in theater, and I thought, what if I just started working on some monologues and looking at acting again? And so one thing led to the next, and I looked at my name, and my name was the wrong name, too many syllables, and my last name sounds like Munchkin, which is no good because I'm short. And then I just sort of said, you know, well, what if I kept the Nick from Muchnick, Nick, and then I took my mother's maiden name, because she's actually the woman that raised me, was my mother, not my father. Mm-hmm. Her last name is Arditi, so I went Nick Arditi.
Perfect.
I like that. That's pretty good.
That's a good, so, and it looks like you. It looks like it fits.
The middle, you know, kind of ethnic, Nebbishy Italian.
Yeah, is that Mediterranean? Could be Jewish could
Spanish,
be
yeah. kind of thing going, but at the same, you know. So I've been working on monologues, and yeah, I'm starting to audition here and in New York, and checking in with my actor friends and making sure that they're just telling me the truth, that this is a very painful process, and that anybody who gets into it must be a masochist.
Oh my God, yes. Oh, I was talking to somebody else, and they said it's I forgot the quote, but it was like they were sadomasochists with an ego disorder or something like that, which was hysterical. And it's funny you actually say that, because a friend of mine is actually online. His name is Paul. And Paul, we started stand-up, and then he stopped for a while. And then I actually hired him to do some acting work with me and for me. And he's like, I'm not an actor. And I go, no, you are an actor. And it worked out really good. And then he got into film. And then we went to radio and then film and kind of went all the way around. And then he's like, no, I don't want to do it. So he's actually coming full circle now too, where he's actually trying to get back on stage. And it's the most unhealthy disease ever. And it's like, well, I don't want to do it. I try to do it. They forced me to do it. And then, you know, then you do it. So, and do you find it's different now getting back into it after taking all those years off?
Could you check in with me in like 6 months after I've been down this roller coaster a little bit more down this road? I'll tell you one thing. What is absolutely, truly horrifying is the idea of getting back on stage. Film, TV, no problem. I can learn the lines. Stage. I understand. If we get it wrong, we can do it again. But ask me to memorize a whole play and then walk out and perform it. That is a form of high wire acting that is still months, if not years away before. Yeah.
Well, that's why you got to take smaller roles, and you got to do like bit parts and things like that. And
that's good advice.
Or you know what else would be good? They do a lot of I actually directed for OTP out of Boston. They do a slam, which a slam is like a 10-minute play, and a lot of companies do 10-minute plays where you have 10 minutes and that's it. You're one character. There's, you know, a little bit, it's just an arc, and it's 10 minutes, and you can do multiple plays if you want to kind of stretch yourself a little bit more. So like you might want to try something like that.
I like it. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, they do short play festivals. And let's see, Salem Theater Company does their Moments of Play, which is they do 8 10-minute plays. OTP does the Slam twice a year, which they do like 10 10-minute plays. But there's a lot of theater companies that actually do these short plays.
Short shorts, yeah. It's kind of like dipping your toes in the water before taking the plunge. Yes.
Yeah, and they have
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to just say that, and it's actually, it could benefit you both ways, because they actually, a lot of times they use unproduced plays and they try to give new playwrights a chance at things. So if you had written something, then you can actually perform it as well.
Mm-hmm. Double masochism.
Just take the credit, damn you.
I know. It's good advice. I know you're all over the map. You do a lot of stuff. You do the stand-up stuff and the acting, and I know you do some stuff up in, is it Salem?
With Halloween, I did a one-man show, which everything's kind of gearing me towards something else, but it was a character called Charlatan, and he was the hysterical medium at large. And he was exactly that. He was a charlatan. And it was a character I wrote and the bits and everything. And we had a few people come up and we did it for 4 weeks. And it didn't, you know, it didn't break the bank. I mean, but the guy who was in charge of the theater said, I don't know if it's going to work. And I'm like, well, it's fine. It was just fine. So, but yeah, always, I'd like to get on stage more, but my thing is a time commitment. That's why 10-minute plays are usually easier for me because of less rehearsal time. There's like 5 rehearsals. And then you do like one weekend and then that's it. So as opposed to a normal play, which could be 2 or 3 weeks, and then it's like a run of 3, you know, at least 2 weekends, you know, so. But it's good that you're kind of branching out. Now, do you find it different in front of the camera than you did behind the camera? Is it?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Yeah, it's funny because as the more I work on the monologues and the more I work on the acting, the more I look at what I'm doing from behind the casting table where I've sat many a time and seen hundreds of auditions. So I have this dual point of view about what I think a producer or director might be looking for. And I know when somebody's authentic and when they're not being authentic. I know when they're being true, when they're not being true. And so the goal is to be as, you know, truthful and as authentic as you can be if you have the right piece of material, because so much of it is picking the right piece of material for your audition piece, if you even get to deliver that. So, you know, again, when you're behind the camera, you're acting almost by proxy. The actors you're acting through the actors. They're doing the lines, they're delivering the beats, they're doing the blocking, and you're kind of along, you're kind of, it's by proxy. You're like the virtual actor as the director. Right. When you're acting, you're actually driving the damn thing. You know, you're in the shot, you know, you're in the shot, you're on the stage, and there's a much more, you know, you are delivering the beat, you are using the inflection of the voice, you are doing the blocking, you are choosing the words, the speed, the volume, all these different things that you're using to deliver the lines. And so there is a big difference, and I am kind of dreading the first time that I'm going to go on a set and be directed. Because I have this feeling the director's going to ask for like take after take after take after take. And I'm going to hit a wall and I'm going to start messing up my lines and I'm going to start forgetting stuff. I'm going to panic and have be a diva or something or run away. Well, you know, I'm going to have to, because I know I've asked actors to, you know, that was great. Can we do it once more? Mm. You know, and that was great. Once more, please. That was great. You know, I mean, I directed you in a piece.
Yeah. And you were very, I got to say, at the beginning, like we did, it was this, you wanted a long continuous thing. And it, for me, I couldn't do it, but what we did was actually good. But it was a longer day, and I started to lose focus, and you put me right back on track, which was great. It was what I needed in that moment as an actor. And it is, you hit that wall where you get tired, and for some reason you forget who you are, or you forget what you're trying to do, and it's up to, you know, we always forget. I mean, as actors, we just do our thing, and, you know, we try to be in the moment all the time, but then it's like, oh, cut, okay. And then who was I? Oh, wait a minute. I remember. Let's do it again. Oh, cut. Oh, wait. Who was I? I remember. And then it does. It does get tired. See, I can't do more than, I'd say 4, maybe 5 takes is my absolute limit. And it's usually, I like 2 or 3 because then I can do multiple things a different way. Yeah. But I'm one of those guys that I can't over rehearse and I can't do it too much because then it gets, I can't do it. I just go, I've had enough. I've just had it up, so I peak. I'm not a diva, certainly. I just peak, and I just go, oh. It's like, you know what it is? It's like drinking. You can have a couple drinks. You're like, yeah, I got this. I'm in it. And then one more drink, and you're like, foo, 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 foo. And that's what happens.
Right. It's a very, very interesting place because you do have to be hot and cold and on and off and sometimes over hours and over multiple takes. It's interesting to see how the people that can go on, where are they going to get that 12th take if it ever gets that far, you know, and how do they keep it spirited and alive. I mean, as a director, when I see an actor hit a wall, I either do one of two things. I either say, well, all right, let's take a break. Let's shoot something else. We'll come back to this later, yeah. Obviously. And that's the one, that's the best solution. Or work it through until they find their second wind.
Yeah.
You know, you know, but those are, you know, there's a whole other world there, which is the world of, are you doing this for someone, or are you doing this as a project you've initiated? If you're working for someone, you're looking back, there's the client, they're looking at the monitor, and they're going to give you the thumbs up. If they think they have it, ultimately you don't have the final say. If it's your own project, you know, you could be dissatisfied until Thursday, you know, and
just right. Well, I've actually had that on a set too, where I had to play a cop, and I had four or five paragraphs, and my partner would say, so what's going on? And I would be like, blah, 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 blah. And the response would be, no shit. Yeah. Blah, 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 blah. And then he'd go, and then what? And I'd be like, blah, blah, blah. So, and I tried to get it right. And we did it like 12, 15, I think it was almost 18 takes from different camera angles and everything. And at some point I just looked at him and I go, I really want to get it right. He goes, I think we got enough though. And I was like, no, really, I want to do it in one take. I want to do it one clean. Can we do one clean? He goes, no, I got enough. And as an actor, I wasn't satisfied, but I saw the finished product and it looked fantastic. And I was like, I was dreading that scene, but I mean, you don't know what it is. I mean, you know, movie magic is movie magic. Stage, now that's a different animal. You're right. Sure, you can't redo that. So, but sure, I'll tell you what, Federico, let's take our second break. And when we come back, I want to test your knowledge of cinema, and I'll leave it at that till we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Radio Irregardless with me, your host, Mark Scalia. We'll be right back.
This is Ebenezer Scrooge. And if you're visiting Salem this holiday season, then come in and see me in Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, presented by the Salem Charlie and the Griffin Theatre. This humorous interactive performance reanimates the Dickens classic. Experience A Christmas Carol with a twist on the Salem Charlie as the holiday tale is brought to life. Tickets are on sale now. Go to salemcharlie.com and click the special tours link. This is Ebenezer Scrooge wishing you all a humbug.
Are you seasonally depressed? If so, CSUN Depressitol may be right for you. Millions are already taking CSUN Depressitol. Some people have had changes in behavior, hostility, agitation, anxiety, anger, constipation, excessive gas, and vomiting. If taking CSUN Depressitol has any of the aforementioned effects, stop taking it immediately. Get on a plane. Yell at strangers. Good luck. It's gonna be a long one.
When you watch cable TV, sometimes there's nothing good on. And when there's nothing good on, you get bored. And when you get bored, yada, 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 yada. And Nazis come and rape your grandchildren. Don't let Nazis rape your grandchildren. Get rid of cable and upgrade to Radio Irregardless with Mark Scalia.
To leave a question or comment, call the Radio Irregardless hotline at 978-219-9294.
And you're back at Radio Irregardless with me, your host, Mark Scalia. And again, joining me via Skype is Federico Muchnik. And I say much. I always mispronounce it, but it's spelled much. What is the origin of your name? What's your heritage? Unless you don't want to say.
If anybody out there knows, please call.
The hotlines are ready.
We've been trying to figure that one out.
Really?
Since I was a kid. No. It's Eastern European. It's from what is today part of Romania, Moldova, I believe it's called. And it's apparently on my dad's side, we came from a little village near Odessa, near the Black Sea, called the Kravilian. And they were the Mutschniks of Crevillian, you know, and they were Mutschnik apparently in German is a miller, one who brews beer. So we were somehow involved with milling or beer. I don't know. There was something involving agriculture. And, you know, being of the Jewish faith at the time, probably observant, certainly more observant than I am now. The law in Russia at the time was that you were conscripted in the military for like life, you know, if you were Jewish, you know, if you weren't, you got 5 years, but if you weren't, you got life. So the thing to do was you had to get out of town. And so my great grandfather and his two brothers created a distraction in the village that night by holding a large party. And apparently the Cossacks came along and they kind of like checked in on the party, and they didn't notice my great grandfather and his brothers escaping to France.
Wow.
Where they got on a boat in Marseille and shipped off to Argentina, which is where my grandfather was born and my father was born. So Mutschnik then turned into that in Argentina, and then there are a bunch of other chapters which led to Mutschnik in Cambridge, Mass. So
very, that's cool. My family just did nothing. We didn't try to escape anything. We just got in a fucking boat, I guess.
Yeah, but they took the journey from the old country.
Yes, it was old. It was very old. Yeah. They were very happy to leave it.
They came to the new world. When did they come to the States?
My grandfather actually got here in, I think it was 1911.
Mm-hmm.
And my father's family got here in the, I think it was 18, I was going to say 1890s, because my father's father was actually born here, I think. So actually it might have been early. It had to be earlier than that. Or maybe he was dragged here. I don't know. I don't know. Most of my relatives are dead, so I can't even verify this information.
Yeah.
My father, my grandfather was the king of Europe at the time.
You can say that now because nobody's around to question it.
Oh, but yeah, Ancestry.com will fucking they'll straighten your shit right out.
I suppose.
So being historical, see, you're historical and you're film educated. I'm going to play a game that's brand new. I actually just produced it just for you, just for tonight.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to play a game, and I'll tell you what the name of the game is.
How do you take direction?
It's how do you take direction? And if you listen to the background music, it's Blondie's One Way or the Other.
Okay.
I was going to play One Direction, You're Beautiful, but it didn't fit. I couldn't mix it right. So the Ancestry.com, not Incestry. That's completely different. That's the different promo. I don't play anymore. But this is a game called How Do You Take Direction, where I'm going to play a movie clip, a sound clip from a movie. You have to guess the movie, and you have to guess the director of the movie. Now, these are not obscure directors. These are major motion pictures. It's not like, oh, it's Charles Nelson P. Phillips, and he did an indie film. These are, you know, major films and things like that. So there's only five, so it's real quick. And you are actually playing against my listening audience, which number in the sevens. No, sorry, well, number in the sixes. They may be on an internet delay, and you and I are speaking almost instantaneously. So that's your advantage. But your disadvantage is there's more of them than of you. If you get a correct answer, I will play. Oh, I didn't do the correct answers. I'll have to figure that out. If you get a correct answer, I'll play you a cool sound. It'll sound something like this. And if you get an incorrect answer, you'll probably get this. Now you could hear both those sounds, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So then you're all set. So you can't say, oh, I didn't hear anything. All right. So all these clips, let's see, the first is 30 seconds and 50 and 30 and 28 and 16 and yes. So there's only a few, but you'll get them. So if you know them, you yell them out right away because the audience will be typing very quickly. Here's our first one. Ready? Here we go.
Yeah.
Look, Daddy, I like you.
I like you.
That's the thing. I like you too.
Daddy!
a lot of things about me you don't know anything about, Daddy.
Remember, movie
things
and director.
Things you wouldn't understand. Things you couldn't understand. Things you shouldn't understand.
I don't understand.
You don't want to get mixed up with a guy like me.
If you know it, just yell it out.
Rebel.
Oh. My listening audience, I think, has got it already.
Oh, well, you know, I think I have to tell you that sounds like some parody of The Godfather, or sounds like, I don't know.
Pee-wee Herman's Big Adventure.
Okay.
And it was directed by Tim Burton.
Oh boy. That's a reference I wouldn't have got, although I am a fan. So okay.
So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to write down FM, that's you, and LA for my listening audience. They have won. Now, my listening audience is ruthless. They decimated my last guest. Actually, he was crying on air. It was sad. It was very sad. So far they got one. But here's, I think you got a shot at this one. Here we go.
You sad freak. I can say whatever the fuck I want. And you won't remember. We'll still be best friends. Or maybe even lovers.
This one's tricky.
I'll see you soon.
You'll get it in this line.
Stay focused. Find a pen. I'm gonna write this down. I'm gonna write it down. Concentrate, concentrate, concentrate. Keep it in mind, keep it in mind, keep it in mind.
Any ideas? It's a tricky one.
Can I get a hint?
Let's see. Carrie, what's her name? Carrie, the chick that was in The Matrix is in it. The Matrix is in it. And Guy Pearce is in it.
Oh, this is Memento by Chris Nolan.
Oh, it is. Let's see. Oh, wait a minute. I didn't play it, but I'm going to play it. Kim got an answer to this one. Here we go.
No.
Nope. Sorry. Sorry. Kim, you get this. And, of course, Federico, you get this. Yay. 1-1.
Oh, boy. I got it right.
You got it right. See? That's how easy it is.
Thank you for that hint.
This one's very easy. This one you'll get. This one's a longer one again. And Jason had no idea, thought it was a different movie. Nobody knew that it's a tricky one. It's really, really hard. Actually, Paul just got it. He goes, why do I get a phone call when this game starts? All right, here's the third one. Tricky.
Crazy scientist turns himself into some kind of a monster. Four mechanical arms welded right onto his body. Guy named Otto Octavius winds up with 8 limbs. What are the odds? Hoffman! Yeah. What are we going to call this guy?
Dr. Octopus.
That's crap.
Science Squid?
Crap.
Dan Aykroyd?
That's pretty good.
Nope.
But it's taken. Wait, I got it. Dr. Octopus.
I like it.
Of course you do.
Oh, Kim Santo. No, Spider-Man 2 directed by Ang Lee. No, not even close. But Spider-Man 2 is correct.
Oh, Sam Raimi?
Sam Raimi. Let's see. Is that correct? Let me find the right. It is. Sam Raimi is correct. Ang Lee is never allowed to direct anything ever again, apparently. After the Hulk, people wanted to kill him.
Yeah. Didn't do too well on that one.
Well, he did Life of Pi, didn't he?
He did. He did a great job on that, and he's a master as far as I'm concerned. But
I enjoyed Life of Pi. I just went, okay. That's a long way to go. It was almost M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong kind of lengthy, where it, you know, you understand the last 10 minutes of it in the last 10 minutes. So it's. It's just, but I think he's amazing. I think he's really good, and he's very much appreciated in the world. Just not the Hulk, apparently.
Yeah, he kind of lost their way there for a while. It was kind of art house guy doing big blockbuster.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, here's a little bit of an interest. Jason said the Indian guy in The Life of Pi was in The Amazing Spider-Man.
Good detail.
He was actually, yes, he was. He played the one that the lizard went after. He was the, he mentions Peter Parker's dad, who was, yes, Richard Parker. Yes, he was, in same name as the tiger. What is it? He mentions Peter's dad, whose name was Richard Parker. Oh, wow, that's trippy. The Indian guy who was in Life of Pi mentioned the tiger, Richard Parker. And then when he played in Spider-Man, he mentioned Peter Parker's dad, whose also name was Richard Parker.
Oh, wow.
Who fucking cares, Jason? You've wasted 2 minutes of my show.
a little less than that. I think 30 seconds.
I'm teasing. Mind blown. Yes, here we go. No one's going to get this one. Here we go. Very tricky. It's long for a reason.
Rosebud. Oh, well, that's obviously Citizen Kane.
Citizen Kane by Orson Welles.
Thank you for mentioning something I know.
Yeah. Orson Welles, Citizen Kane. Correct. It is, yes, Kim Santos said Citizen Kane. And that's like the only recognizable part of that movie.
It's Rosebud. It sure is.
It is, but it's the most recognizable, so it still works.
Yeah, it's pretty essential, yeah.
Federico, this has actually never, well, this has happened once or twice, but you might actually beat my audience 4-1 if you get this next one, which is really tricky. This one's very tricky. As soon as you know it, yell it out. Only 15 seconds worth.
Okay. Drink the drink!
But I don't want the drink!
He doesn't want the drink.
He does!
I don't!
You do!
I don't!
You do!
I don't!
You do!
I don't!
You don't!
I do!
Don't.
I do.
You don't.
That's Who Framed Roger Rabbit by Robert Zemeckis.
It's Who Framed Roger Rabbit by Robert Zemeckis. Is that correct? It is correct. I can play this game all day. I love this game. I love this game. Actually, I was going to stop at 5, but I can keep going. It's because you've decimated the audience. Here's what I'm going
to... Oh, that's good.
Let's try this. Oh, where are we? Oh, there we are. Yeah, let's do this. Let's see. I'll play it. This one will be tricky. If you get this one, you deserve to win. Here, let's try this one. I'm going to change this one to 6. And then I'm going to move it up. There we go. 6. And then let's do this. And then let's say done. There we go. So I can find it later. Here we go. Here's the very last one. It's very tricky. No one's going to get this.
Now listen to me, all of you. You are all condemned men.
That's the network.
We keep you alive to serve.
That's what?
Hold on. Keep going.
Okay.
Serve this ship. So row well and live.
I'll play it again.
Now listen to me, all of you. You are all condemned men. We keep you alive to serve this ship. So row well.
That sounds like Peter Finch or somebody like that. And I was going to say Mutiny on the Bounty, but I don't think it is Mutiny on the Bounty.
No, because they're rowing. They're rowing. It's not Amistad. No, it's not Mutiny on the Bounty.
Is it they're rowing, huh?
Yeah, it's one of these scenes that it's a very famous scene.
Is it Lifeboat by Hitchcock?
No. It only takes place on the boat in this scene. Other than that, okay. He's not on the boat at all. The lead character is not on the boat. He's typically in a chariot.
In a chair. Oh, what is this, Spartacus?
No, it's not Spartacus. It's not Spartacus.
Is it Ben Hur? It's by Ben. Cecil B. DeMille.
But wait a minute, it's Ben Hur.
It's Ben Hur by Lewis William Wyler. Wait a
minute. I moved it. It's Ben Hur by William Weller. You got it before Kim Santo got it. Oh my God! Which means I am forced to play. Where is it? Yes, Federico, you know something? Nobody's beat my audience in that fashion in a long time, which is good because I think next week we're drinking. So that is not going to happen at all. So you get this. You beat me perfect. Nash, you win. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to tabulate all the points, and we're going to take our third and final break. When we come back, I'm going to ask the Radio Irregardless three questioned gigs, best, worst, and first. You are listening to Radio Irregardless with me, your host, Mark Scalia. We will be right back.
This episode of Real Celebrity Rumors. The Flintstones. The show first aired on September 30th, 1960, but was canceled 6 years later due to the one-a-day vitamin scandal. More difficulties came when Fred's dog died by choking on a brontosaurus bone. A police autopsy revealed later it was actually from an apatosaurus. In April 1987, Wilma filed for divorce. Later that year, she wrote a tell-all book, Yabba Dabba Do's and Do Nots, My Life as a Flintstone. Fred now lives alone in Bedrock. And on the next Real Celebrity Rumors, the Powerpuff Girls, Sugar, Spice, and Not Everything Nice.
Love food and wine? Get to know Salem, Mass. In a fun and delicious way. Join me on a Salem food tour. Our 5-star rated walking tour gives guests the perfect opportunity to enjoy an afternoon with friends or coworkers. Great for locals and visitors, our tours book in advance and can be crafted for your special event. For more information on our tours and to make reservations, please visit us at salemfoodtours.com.
And you're back at Radio Irregardless with me, your host, Mark Scalia. And again, joining us, our returning champion, because I've tabulated the scores, decimated 5-1. Audience, you should really be ashamed of yourselves. Ashamed, you horrible people. Federico Mooch, Nick.
Nick Arditi.
Nick Arditi.
Just go with Nick Arditi.
No, do you want to go by Nick Arditi? Are you gonna file a petition with the union on that name?
Well, first I am union eligible. I'm SAG after eligible, but I'm not actually in the union yet.
Good.
The piece I did last year for PBS made me eligible, but I think if I do get into or have to do that at some point, I would go with Nick Arditi big time, yeah.
Yeah, you can actually see if that name is available through the website.
Because yeah.
My name was, which is great. So I didn't have to change my name or anything.
But go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, as this is something I ask all of my guests, whether they're actors, comics, entertainers, musicians, or regular civilians, and I ask them the same thing. I do gigs. Best, worst, and first, which, of course, if you go through the first time you did something, everybody goes, wow, that was great. What a really good time. And then you say, this is the best event I've ever done. And people go, wow, that's fantastic. And then you say the worst, which is always the funniest. So we keep it for the last. So you can, if you wouldn't mind, share your first time making a film or acting, and then your best time making a film or acting, and then your worst time making a film or acting. And you can even intermix them if you like. You could say this is the first time, blah, blah, blah. And
Which one do you want first?
First.
First, okay.
First is always first.
Let's see. I'd say the first time was also among the worst time. I would have to say I was in the fourth grade and I got the lead in Androcles and the Lion. I was Androcles and George Bernard Shaw's Androcles and the Lion.
Okay.
And we were playing Androcles and the Lion. I was Androcles. And I went out on we were doing this in a courtyard in a school. It was outside, and there were kids everywhere, a couple hundred kids. And I was out there delivering my lines, and I forgot my lines. I had to wing it, and I remember just drifting slowly towards the side of the stage towards my teacher, who had a copy of the play in her hand, out of the corner of my mouth saying, "Line, line, line," or something like this. And she sort of gave me the line. I think that was the first time I did some acting of any size. And it was the time, it was probably the worst time, because, you know, it was one of those, you know, George Bernard Shaw, he wrote some monologues that would be like two pages.
What grade were you in?
This is like the fourth grade.
What the fuck is George Bernard Shaw?
But it's his one children's play, Mark, you see.
Really?
It's a kid's play. Androcles and the Lion is all about, you know, it's about this Roman slave who's on his way to Rome. He's on his way to Rome to be thrown to the lions in the circus. And on the way, he comes upon a lion with a thorn in its paw.
Oh, I know this story.
Of the lion from the lion's paw, and then they later meet up in the circus, and the lion refuses to eat Androcles, and they gang up on the emperor, and the lion says, "You got to let this guy free," and everybody has a nice happy ending, and so on. So that was my first and probably worst. The best, I'd say, the best, hands down, has to be the gig on the Golden Boat, which ended up at Sundance in '91. That was a nice experience, and it involved shooting the film over four weekends in November of 91 or so. And it involved getting on a plane Friday morning at dawn, flying to New York and being on a set by 8 a.m., shooting Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then getting on a plane Sunday night back to Boston, and then doing it all over again for the weekend later, because Raul was teaching film at Harvard and I was producing at GBH. So we literally shot it on weekends. But when we got onto the set, it was like a machine, you know, this great indie New York crew and all these Lower East Side artists like Vito Acconci, Kathy Acker, Jim Jarmusch was there. And it was a lot of work. It was a lot of fun. But, you know, again, my job on that one, the reason why it was so effortless was just to just show up and just be myself and recite the lines, you know.
Nobody's ever put me in a plane to just be me. That sucks. I've been told to get off a plane because it was me.
Yeah, have you really? Really? You've never been kicked off a plane, have you?
I got close. I've been moved. I've been moved around. Sir, would you switch your seat? Yes, I would.
Because I have awful. I mean, do you have fear of flying or?
Oh no! I love flying. That's why I would love it. Like, I would love my own private jet. I just want to sit back and, you know, because I've sat in first class a couple times. And it's just evil. I just want to sit there and go, "Sir, would you like a cocktail?" Yes, I would. Yes, I would. I want to be the Tony Stark of doing nothing. I just want to sit in a plane, have somebody go, a hot towel? Yes, I'd like a fucking hot towel. That's what I would. I want a hot towel. And I want, "Do you have cognac?" Of course you do. Yeah, well, let's get some cognac in this bitch so we can move on.
Yeah, we do. Well, we all like to be pampered. It's a good thing.
Yeah. But yeah, that sounds really cool that you getting on the plane every, oh my God, that must have been so fun.
It was the best experience. I mean, I've had a couple of others where, you know, I got to direct some interesting stuff. But you know, best, worst, and what was the best, worst?
First, and what was first, the, best, and first, worst.
First, best, and worst. Yeah. Yeah, I think we covered it, right?
That's asking for a line when you're in the fourth grade. That's pretty scary. Yeah. That's terrible.
I'm trying to think if there was anything worse than that.
If that was the worst. you got me beat, because I got way worse stories than that.
I got a really bad one. You know, I don't know. It's about 2 minutes.
Shoot, we got some time.
I've always been a fan of David Mamet. And
really? Oh, that's where we're going to differ.
Yeah. I mean, I know he's gone to the dark side or the other side. I mean, he's changed his politics and so on. But I went through a big Mamet phase where I still think he's pretty good. But I don't like the way he directs his actors, but I love his writing.
Right. I agree with you that. I'll agree with you.
I like his movies a lot. And so one day, Mamet was in town making a film called Oleana, and I decided that no matter what, I had to be on that set as a production assistant, and I had to watch Mamet work. And so I got up out of bed, and I drove to the location, and I booked a job as an intern, and I walked onto the set, and there was David Mamet, and there was William H. Macy, and there was Rebecca Pidgeon, and I walked right up to David Mamet in the middle of, as in between shots, and I said, "Hey, hi, how are you, Mr. Mamet? My name is Federico Muchnik. How are you?" And I'm just saying, I'm glad to be here. And he goes, "Oh, Federico, thanks for coming. Thanks for participating." Yeah. And at that point, the producer, Sarah Drivers, saw me, and she gestured with her finger to come to her. She said, "Could you come here, please?" And I said, "Yes, can I help you?" She said, "Do you see that broom?"
You were introduced to the broom after David Mamet.
Yeah, I'd like you to take this broom, and I'd like you to go to down the hall at the other end of this building, and I'd like you to sweep out the room at the other end of this building. So I did that, and then I tried to get back on set, and they saw me, and they said, I was a complete idiot. I was a young idiot, of course, you know, and they saw me coming, and they said, "You know, we'd like you now to get into this truck with these Teamsters and drive to the other side of Boston to pick up some furniture. So why don't you go with these guys?" I was sitting in between these two Teamsters in a really bad mood, and they were talking about me in the third person, like, "He doesn't seem too happy to be with us."
Right. Right. No, I don't think I've ever met a Teamster in a good mood, to be honest with you.
And Mark, the capper to this whole thing was that we were driving down Prospect Street outside of Central Square, and the truck stops at a red light, and I'm thinking, this is hell on earth. Why did I even get in this? And at that very moment, crossing the street and the crosswalk is my wife pushing our baby daughter in a carriage.
Oh.
And I looked at that, and at that point, I realized what really mattered in life. And so I let them drive me back to the location. I got in my car, and I went home.
Yep.
I think that was the worst.
Well, yeah.
But it's, you know, you asked.
It's a great story. I'm Mr. Mamet. It's nice to meet you. How are you, Federico? And by the way, I'd like to introduce your co-star, a broom. That's a great story. So, Federico, what else do you have coming up? Do you have any? I know that you're doing the acting thing, and you're doing the monologue and auditioning, and films are kind of quiet for you now. But anything you got coming up? Anything big that we should know that you're in or coming up on?
Let's see. I am right now. I'm doing some stuff. I am doing some producing. I'm working with a company called Intercultural Productions. We're making some. Believe it or not, safety videos for Biogen. So that's my month of December. But what can I tell you? I would say the next thing I've got is I'm a musician, and I'm playing in a couple of different bands, and we didn't get to talk about that. But
oh my God, I forgot about that. I totally forgot.
I am playing in a couple of different places here and there, and in Arlington, Cambridge, Arlington, with a guy named Dan Fox and a few other people. I would say check in with me in the spring. I have to be honest, I'm in reconstruction. I'm going to auditions. That's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. The film has done what it's doing. I'm here in Cambridge with Catherine and the kids. I'm just puttering around the house, doing a lot of reading.
What's the, is there a band that you're with, or is it just couple guys?
It's just friends. I'll tell you that Catherine's band is worth seeing, and I videotape them as they play around town. She's in a band called Funkasaurus, and they are playing actually up in Newburyport at the Grog in a week.
Oh, cool.
And I should be up there. I think it's in Newburyport. Newburyport. Yeah.
The Grog is in Newburyport.
Yeah, Newburyport. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Just outside the center.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nice place.
Yeah, nothing's in Newbury at all.
Nothing
of consequence is in Newbury.
But if you check back in the spring, I'm sure something will emerge that I can vouch for as being true, authentic, and hopefully enjoyable. So.
Well, cool. Well, you're a friend of the show. You're on the Facebook thing, so you can always just check in with that and put anything. And I always left that open. You know, I like people to post. It's just not me posting stuff. Everybody can post stuff. So if you got something coming up, I'd love to hear about what you got going on, especially in the spring, because hopefully in the spring everybody's going to be busy after making it through this horrible, offensive polar vortex that's coming. So.
Deal. And good luck to you, man, for all the good work you're doing out there.
Oh, man, thanks. I appreciate it. I'm always trying to stay busy, healthy, happy. That's all. That's all I do it for, because it ain't the cash. It ain't.
Exactly.
Well, Federico, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Federico Muchnick, everybody. Yay. We'll clap over him. There we go. All right. Thanks so much, Federico.
Bye-bye.
Great guest. Oh, my God, that story about David Mamet. That was amazing. That was so funny. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I've just checked. Let me check some email. Let's see what we got. Any email? Let's see. How do you do this? I got to do this. Add account. There we go. It's already set up for me. I'm just clicking it. Any email? Nope. Unless you set up on YouTube, no email, no calls, which means we get to go home a little early, everybody. And since we're all home already, that kind of makes some sense, which is fine. I will tell you what I got going on this weekend. I have actually booked myself a predicament, and I didn't get into this because it's too funny. Tomorrow night, Thursday, November 13th, I'm actually opening up for Ace, the comedy hypnotist, Steve Coppola, at the Pembroke Academy School in Manchester. Coincidentally, I have booked myself at the Tupelo Music Hall tomorrow night in Londonderry, New Hampshire. Now, this is where it gets funny. Both shows start at the same time. When I originally took the booking, one was supposed to start at 7 and the other was supposed to start at 8. And nobody told me until this. So it's going to be interesting. So whether you see me tomorrow at the Pembroke Academy or you see me at Londonderry at the Tupelo Music Hall, I will be at both locations. I'm going to work it out. It's going to be a lot of fun to work out. And then, excuse me. Oh, wow, that was funny. And then Saturday night, I will be, just one thing, in Colchester, Connecticut at St. Joseph's Polish Club for a fundraiser, telling jokes there. Next week, ladies and gentlemen, we return live. The Radio Irregardless Drinking Games coming back with guest and friend of the show, Jason Boddy. If you want to be a sponsor or guest at radioirregardless@gmail.com, call the hotline 978-219-9294. We'll see you next week, only a couple weeks of Christmas.
This has been Radio Irregardless, hosted by Mark Scalia, your non-standard blend of irrespective listening and regardless enjoying. Radio Irregardless was written, directed, and produced by Mark Scalia and broadcast live from Salem, Massachusetts via Mixlr.com. I'd like to thank my on-air guests, courtesy of Skype, and all the online listeners for their comments. The Radio Irregardless theme music, If Only I Had a Pen, was written and composed by Derek Dupuy. All material and content, property of MS Enterprises and copyrighted 2014. Thank you for listening.
And finally, anyone who uses the terms irregardless, a whole nother, or all of the sudden shall be sent to a work camp.